States v. Leonardis, case number 25-2777. Mr. Egan, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. James Egan for Mark Leonardis. This court should remand for plenary resentencing because Mark Leonardis was entitled to a two-level reduction under section 2G2.2B1 of the sentencing guidelines. This is because his conduct that's covered by A2 of that guideline was limited to receipt and he had no intention to distribute. The government's arguments should be rejected, first because its interpretation of subsection B would produce absurd results in that it would sweep up mere possessors and exclude them who happen also mere receivers who also happen to be mere possessors. And secondly,
may
even
I
if
ask you a few questions, Mr. Egan.
I'm sorry?
May I ask you a few questions?
Oh, please. Of course.
So first, you agree that this is on plain error review?
Correct, yes.
And second, was it appropriate for the district court or, frankly, on appeal for us to consider the written statement by your client that appears in the PSR in connection with assessing your argument?
Yes.
So the PSR, without getting into it, the written statement on which the district court relied, could have relied, refers to and seems to admit that he actually transmitted or conveyed different photographs of a minor V1. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. He admitted that. That's part of the record. Okay, those photographs are not sexually
explicit.
Speak
right
though.
Into the microphones, please.
Sorry, Your Honor. That's correct. However, those photographs are not sexually explicit or in any way unlawful, either the taking of them or the sending of them. So they're not. I don't see how they're not covered by A2.
Doesn't that still make his conduct, since he was using those photographs to obtain the illicit material that he was charged with receiving, isn't that part of a course of conduct still that's more than receipt? He wasn't just sitting passively receiving on his computer. He actually took these photographs, and while they themselves may not have been illegal, they were of a type, incest-oriented, that he used affirmatively to obtain those other photographs. Why should not consider those?
Well, Your Honor, those are not, like I said, those are not illegal to take or to distribute. If we're into relevant conduct, which I think your question leans towards, that would not even be an offense. So it would not, we wouldn't get to the question of grouping, and therefore it wouldn't get to the question of whether 1B1.3 would apply, relevant conduct provision that deals with grouping and common scheme or plan. So,
but does relevant conduct always have to be an offense? Can it be other additional acts?
Yeah, that's a question I'd like to have. Does relevant conduct have to be an offense? Or can other conduct that speaks to the behavior of the person but is relevant, so that, you know, I may agree with you that the matter with a daughter, which is a terrible offense, is not relevant conduct. But the question is whether something which isn't a defense can be relevant conduct.
I think, as the government's pointed out, I don't think this court has directly answered that question, has hinted that it does in a case, Ahmed from 2000. It's cited in the briefs.
So once you answer it that way, and you recall your answer to my first question, you agree that plain error review is the appropriate standard of review, then how can you prevail?
Because this court has answered the question about, it doesn't, 1B1.3A2, I believe, is the relevant provision we're talking about. And that deals with grouping.
The relevant provision by relevant conduct?
Of relevant conduct, the relevant, yeah. Okay. That, this court has been clear in since 1990 in Stevenson, in 1999 in Livorsi, that only offenses that are that the sort of putative relevant conduct offense and the criminal offense have to be grouped under 3D1.2. Implicit in that, obviously, is that the offense has to be criminal. That's been spelled out in Ahmed 2000. And it's implicit, and it's not even just implicit.
When
it's
you
stated.
Say implicit.
I misspoke. It's in the decision.
Have we held?
Yeah.
That relevant conduct must be an offense.
Well, so
the answer I believe is no.
No, but that only matters for to go back up to 1B1.3A1, which is all acts, et cetera, et cetera. That fall within the grouped offense. So we're not getting to, you can't use acts to get to a grouping. The only way to get to a grouping is
the
offense.
The question is whether this is clear enough for plain error.
You see,
your main argument about the daughter thing, yes, we have cases, and so that probably would get by plain error of a government of a contrary notwithstanding. But as to this, is it clear enough so that on a plain error review?
Well, again, I point the court to Stevenson and Livorsi. The court has never expressly held otherwise. It's never contradicted there. The government cites a footnote in Kahn, which it itself sort of guided the court to. That was dicta in a summary order. It was cited no decisions and never even held, actually, that the relevant putative relevant conduct offense. So to get back to the sort of underlying question, though, is Stevenson and Livorsi say that the offense has to, the relevant conduct for purposes of grouping, which is the provision we're talking about, has to be an offense. It's not just some other act. And
well, it says all acts and omissions that were part of the same course of conduct or common scheme. Doesn't say it has to be an offense, but okay, that's your argument.
That would require grouping.
For grouping. Okay.
Right. And so grouping gets to offenses. It doesn't, in the grouping provision, 3D1.2, it's not talking about acts, it's talking about offenses. And obviously this gets to, but also plain error too, it's not just precedents, it's principles. There's a principle against interpreting the interpretations that lead to absurd results. The government's interpretation would lead to an absurd result in that it would exclude the mere possessor who happens also to be a mere possessor.
Except that the evidence in the, maybe I misread it, in the PSR, the written statement suggests more than mere possession.
Yeah.
It suggests distribution in some form.
Sure. And we're not making an as applied challenge. We're dealing with interpretation of a provision that applies in every case and gives full effect to the language. The language is conduct. It's not offense. It's material, deals with material, not just any act. And it follows the citation to A2, which is all about the other post-production offenses that are covered by the guideline.
All right, thank you. And you reserved some time for rebuttal, so we'll hear from you then. We'll hear from the government, Mr. Sutcliffe. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court, Thomas Sutcliffe on behalf of the United States. Section 2G2 2B1 states that a defendant is eligible for reduction under that provision only if his conduct was limited to the receipt or solicitation of child pornography. The defendant's conduct here was not limited to the receipt or solicitation of child pornography. That is because the defendant also sexually abused his daughter.
But that is not grouped, and under our precedents, it must be, both sides must be grouped. So I don't see how that helps you. Other circuits have held the way you say, but we have not.
Well, Your Honor,
And here, unlike the previous things we were talking about, there are precedents, and where there's a precedence, then it's plain error.
Well, Your Honor, as of 2019, a panel of this court looked at this issue and considered the question of whether both have to be groupable to be unresolved. And I think that's a fair characterization. There are comments in this case that might suggest in past precedents that do seem to indicate.
Well, there may be comments, but where there is a precedent, we are bound. So there may be a summary order, as there was, but that doesn't matter. If there's a precedent to a particular point, that settles that issue, and that under our law is plain error. So you'd do better to make the argument that was being made to the other previously.
Well, Your Honor, what I would suggest is that I don't think this court has squarely addressed the two competing interpretations of A2. And if a panel of this court were to look at it, precedential or not, and conclude that the issue is unclear, I don't think we can fault the district court for not finding the answer to be clear otherwise.
We're not not a matter of faulting, a matter of whether we follow our precedent.
Well, Your Honor, again, the question is whether or not it's clear from this court's precedence whether that's the case. And we would submit that as...
Is your argument that where there is a precedent and then another court says, I don't like that precedent, maybe it isn't real, and there's a summary order that goes the other way, which is not precedential, that is enough so that is no longer plain error when the precedent is violated? Are you making that argument?
No, Your Honor. I'm suggesting that this court hasn't squarely addressed this issue, as is evidenced by that summary order, which indicated that the question was unresolved. That's an indication
that... How can you say we haven't squarely focused on that issue when there is a precedent?
Well, Your Honor, because I think the other precedents have never actually weighed these competing interpretations. There's no reasoned analysis, or at least very little in any of these cases. It's usually devoted only to a sentence which appears more as an assumption than a definitive holding. In any case, Your Honor, I do want to address the issue of the interpretation of subsection B and emphasize whether this court is more comfortable proceeding under A1 or A2. We do insist that at least under plain error review, relevant conduct is the standard here. And the reason for that, quite simply, is the language in 1B1.3a. That sets forth a presumption. It states that courts should look to all relevant conduct when determining whether or not a specific offense characteristic applies, unless the guideline directs otherwise. Well, here, subsection B1 is a specific offense characteristic, and nowhere in that guideline does it purport to negate that presumption. And I would note, Your Honors, that at least two other circuits have also adopted a relevant conduct interpretation in precedential decisions, that being the Sixth and the Third. And a defendant does not point to any contrary authority, binding or otherwise. In fact, the most compelling authority he cites...
There's no doubt that other circuits don't read it the way we have. And perhaps we should reconsider our way of looking at it. I'm not denying that. You know, I'm not arguing that your position isn't probably the best interpretation if I were making it de novo. But that isn't what...
Well, I should be more specific, Your Honor. Yes. There's putting aside the A2 question, I think the defendant is disputing whether we look to relevant conduct at all under subsection B, or whether instead we're confined only looking to offenses that fall within the scope of 2G2.2. As to that issue, I don't think this court has ever weighed in.
That's where you say there is no precedent.
There's no precedent in this court, Your Honor, and all the authorities outside of the circuit, I think, support the government's interpretation. So as to that issue, whether relevant conduct applies, I would submit it can't be plain error, given that there isn't any binding authority adopting the defendant's interpretation. So at the very least, we are proceeding under relevant conduct. Now, as for whether relevant conduct has to be an offense,
that's the second question.
Right. I think other circuits are divided. The Sixth Circuit and the Third Circuit have said that it has to be an offense and relevant conduct for a defendant to be ineligible.
Right. Those are other circuits.
Again, this court hasn't opined on it. The Fifth Circuit, Your Honor, in the Galuba case we cite, has suggested that as long as it's otherwise evidence of sexual deviance, as long as it's concerning behavior, and if it qualifies as relevant conduct.
Is there anything in our circuit on that point?
No, Your Honor. I think the only cases in which this court has interpreted...
And the fact that other circuits go one way or another doesn't really matter if we're plain error, because if we haven't spoken, then it isn't plain error.
Understood, Your Honor, but I think the fact that other courts have also adopted ours on top of the lack of precedent here makes it even a tougher challenge for them to overcome the plain error standard. So we would submit that at least it's not clear or obvious that the district court would have been wrong here to use relevant conduct as the standard. And I think there are two routes the court can take. It can take the A1 route and conclude that the defendant's distribution of the pictures of his daughter was part and parcel with the offense. It was part of the conduct. It was occurred during the unlawful offense. Or we would submit, and I understand the court.
It was not quite during.
I think it was, Your Honor.
When was it?
So this is, the indictment alleges conduct April 2021 until I think June of 2021.
Okay.
The defendant admits that he's trading pictures of his daughter. And in exchange, he's then receiving, in the same chat conversations, the child pornography for which he is convicted. So these are contemporaneous, or for all practical purposes.
It's his use of the photographs that he took.
Exactly, yes.
The period of his offense conduct. That's why A1 works.
That's correct, yes. So it's happening contemporaneously. So on A1 grounds, I think that alone would be sufficient. We would also submit, understanding that the court may not agree as to the application of subsection A2, if it were to apply, we would also submit that the abuse of the daughter is part of the same scheme or plan, given that there's a common victim that underlies both offenses. That being the daughter, V1 in this case, who's a victim both of the receipt of child pornography offense, in the sense that pictures of her are the currency that's being used to obtain these pictures, but also a victim in the sense that she's obviously the victim of the hands-on sexual abuse that comes a few months before that. So in short, Your Honors, the defense conduct here, his relevant conduct here includes conduct that is not limited to the receipt or solicitation of child pornography. And for that reason, the district court did not plainly err by not sua sponte applying the reduction. Your Honors, unless the court has any other further questions, we'll rest on our briefs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Egan. Speaking of maybe only for myself, focus on A1.
Yeah.
A1 of
1B1.3.
Speak right into the microphone and loudly.
Sorry,
you're much taller, so maybe raise
it. It's. I'm already at the max. Okay. Assuming we get there, which I wouldn't want the court to do, but because, like I said, well-established principles require interpreting the guide, 2G2.2B1, to avoid absurdity. And the only way to do that is to limit it to the conduct that is covered by A2 of G2.2. But assuming you get to the relevant conduct question, A1 doesn't apply because we're talking again about conduct. The reason that the government argues that we're knocked out, that is to say that his conduct is not limited to receipt, is because of the allegations involving V1. That conduct predates the commission of the incident offense. It did not occur during the offense in preparation for it.
But he's saying that the use of the photographs that he took of V1,
yes,
that although they were not explicit, they were not pornographic, they still were, he described in the context of soliciting photos that he was going to receive, his own actions with regard to V1, and use the photographs that he took of her and description of incestuous conduct to obtain the receipt. And so I think the argument is that his conduct that's cognizable in this setting is not limited to receipt.
A defendant's conduct is never limited to receipt. If we're going to give the government the full weight of its interpretation, that is to say, anything other than receipt would knock him out. There's no evidence.
Well, it could be you press the button on your browser and get to where you want to go and receive what you're looking for. But this was much more affirmative action. He took photographs. Mm-hmm. Maybe outside, not during the commission of the offense, but then he used them to trade, to procure the illicit material.
And again, think in terms of plain error. You know, I might well agree that that's not enough at a...
Right. But, I mean, again, we're not talking about conduct that is the concern of 2G 2.2, right? We're talking about conduct that we think is immoral, right? That is to say, conduct, the photographing and distributing of the photographs, right? They're not illegal. They're not themselves covered.
Why do you say that that is not within, and where have we said that that is not within the scope of 2G 2.2B1?
Because we're talking about conduct
Where have we said it?
Where have we said that the reduction applies only when a defendant can prove that his conduct is limited to receipt? Is that the question? You haven't said that. The court hasn't said that.
Okay. All right. No. Okay. Thank you very much.
If I could just make one more point, though, as with respect to the question about grouping and the other portion of relevant conduct and whether that has to be criminal or not, if you look at 3D1.2, the beginning of it says all counts involving substantially the same harm. So we're dealing with counts. So we're dealing with offenses, that is to say, like statutory offenses. And 1B1.3.
Well, of course, yes.
Well, and 1B1.3
has to do with the counts.
Requiring multiple counts. So we're not talking about conduct that is not criminal. We're talking about conduct that could give rise to a count of conviction. Obviously, we don't have one. We're dealing with a state offense. But in Ahmed, this court has said, if the state offense would otherwise be a federal one, notwithstanding the jurisdictional questions, we can consider it for purposes of grouping.
Am I right? The state offense dropped? It was as covered by the federal?
Correct. It was dismissed, I think, given the federal prosecution and the penalties involved. Yeah.
So it looks like the state authorities thought that the federal prosecution might take account in some way.
Or that there was no need to put V1 through. There are lots of reasons.
There are lots of reasons.
I could only speculate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll reserve the decision.
Bye.